for October 20th, 2011, computer 124675. It's video games, hot dog. I'm Zach.
I'm Riff.
And I'm Kevin.
And it's time for video games, hot dog. What are you looking at me quizzically?
Well, because did you record a title segment?
No, I'm going to do that afterwards.
Do you mean next week?
Yeah, next week with a joke about what we say during the show, because that makes it better. Yeah. It makes it seem like I can see the future to the listeners.
Huh.
How's it going, guys?
Okay.
It's going all right.
What have you all been up to?
I spent way too much money on eBay buying maps.
Maps.
Fantasy locations and similar things.
Yeah. Fantasy locations like Belgium.
Yeah, and Lord of the Rings countries and cloth map from Ultima 3 and stuff like that.
What are you going to do with them?
Hang them up. I mean, what do you do with anything you collect, right?
Hang it up?
Hang it up, yeah.
I guess.
Put them on display.
I collect babies.
Oh.
I'm discouraged by local and state laws to hanging them up.
The hang it up thing... While, yes, it does mean putting things on the walls, it's also from Jordan and Jesse Go listening. It makes me think that you should stop collecting it. Like, hang it up.
Oh, you're right. Right? Well, I mean, I can't stop collecting it unless I have started. I have to establish a collection first before I can quit.
That's true.
Yeah. Are the maps cool?
Yeah, there's some really good ones. It was originally only $200, but... One of the ones I bought was so nice and turned out to be a series of four that I went back and bought the other three.
That's pretty expensive, Riff.
I kind of need a way to delete eBay from my computer.
You're going to put it in like a shitty $8 frame, too.
I'll put it in a nice $8 frame.
Oh, okay. What about you, Kevin? I understand that you had some stuff you wanted to accomplish this week.
Well, yeah. So we had a very small birthday party for... one-time advice hot dog guest Rachel Bass, and at the party I brought out some of my childhood notebooks and we also played with a bunch of Transformers, but yeah, a big hit at the party was a a to-do list that I made when I was
your junior bucket list.
I think it was, it might not have been a bucket list. It might have just been like what I was planning on doing that week. I really don't know.
That's a hell of a list to do in one week.
Yeah, you know, I don't have a lot of context for this. This is a separate piece of paper which is taped into my notebook. So I am guessing that this is from second or third grade. So okay. I was 8 or 9.
Let's hear it.
All right, there are 17 items on this list. Item number one, learn about astronomy and space.
Seems like, based on the rest of the contents of that notebook, you had already done that one.
Yeah.
Were you doing that just so that you'd feel like you had some momentum in the list?
I was just making a list of stuff I wanted to do.
Like, you could always learn more about astronomy.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I had, like, done some pretty comprehensive lists of things from space.
Like, there are still at least 3 or 4 things that you don't know about astronomy or space.
That's true. That is true. Item number two, learn chemistry and physics.
Okay.
Cool. So notice that did not warrant an about. Like, astronomy and space were somehow like these things that I could only learn about. I couldn't learn them.
All right.
Whereas I could just master chemistry and physics.
Yeah. That's how that works, I think. Trivial. You get to be a master. You get a master's degree.
You do. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nothing beyond that.
So then I started reaching a little bit further. Item number three, visit the center of the Earth.
What did you want to do there?
I don't know. I mean, I saw, Journey to the Center of the Earth, the movie, and it was pretty cool. There was all kinds of stuff going on.
So you wanted to see, like, Brendan Fraser, probably dinosaur poop?
This was way before Brendan Fraser was a thing.
I don't believe you. I think Brendan Fraser is older than us.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
Item number four, take a trip to the moon.
Okay.
Okay.
That seems like a thing that if you're also interested in astronomy and space,
might be possible in your lifetime.
Item number five, visit the center of the moon.
Okay, that's getting a little harder.
I feel like I'm combining elements from former...
From previous items. It's getting a little derivative. Does the moon have a molten core?
I don't believe so, but I don't know.
So you could go to the center of the moon.
See, that's one of those things that I have not yet learned about astronomy and space.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, that's really more of a geology problem, which you don't have that.
No, but it's space geology.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. Wait, isn't the Earth technically in space?
It is.
Yeah, I guess
so. Really,
true.
Everything is space if you think about it.
Sure. Item number 6: visit the center of the sun.
Okay, okay. That one's going to be hard.
I think that one is particularly challenging. Of all the things that I've listed so far, I think that is the most challenging.
Well,
so far.
So far.
We know the rest of this list ahead of time.
Yeah.
So.
Item number 7: make a robot.
Okay. Also, I bet you must have made a robot at some point in your education.
I've made several different things that could be considered robots, I bet. Yeah. Like nothing that's like serves me drinks and.
Were you ever in Boy Scouts? Did you ever make a rowboat?
I made a box car derby.
Did your frat have a brobot?
No. No.
Cool. Your frat wasn't really a bro frat. It was more of a robo frat.
It was more of a robo frat, yeah.
Robo frat.
Item number 8, go to Venus.
Okay.
Okay.
Item number 9.
You could have done that on the way to the center of the sun.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
So you'd want to reorder these.
I think I would. I was young.
Sure.
I didn't have my priorities straight.
If you had made the list after learning about astronomy, you might have made the list in a more sensible order.
Yeah. Exactly. Item number 9, to learn about the world.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Including like grammar of English.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, that was.
Yeah. Items 10 through 12 are pretty similar. So I'm just gonna read those together. Item 10 is go to Jupiter. 11 is go to Mercury, and 12 is go to Mars.
Yeah. Again, really weird order to visit those things in.
Also, these are go to is not two words.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
These are programming instructions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also know that you're not interested in the centers of these planets.
Yeah. Just the outsides. Okay, item number 13. Make a live cell.
Okay.
Okay.
I think, like, when you turned, like, 12 or 13, you started making a lot of those.
Well, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think when I was conceived, I started making some cells.
Not really under your own power, though.
That's
you debatable. Weren't making them and putting them somewhere.
Item number 14, make a human body.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Item 15, go into a heart.
Okay, that's the one that I'm kind of up in the air over whether going to the center of the sun is more difficult than that or not.
I think, I think miniaturizing and going into a heart, you know, they make it look so easy in the movies, right?
Yeah.
Like inner space.
Like an inner space, sure.
Yeah, shit.
Do you think that you had seen inner space at that point, and that's why you put that on your list?
I'm thinking that, like, a lot of this might have had to do with movies that I was mm-hmm. seeing.
Like
around.
That movie, Journey to the Center of the Sun.
Right. item number 16, make a heart.
See, what, like... That poor guy that you made in step 14.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't have a heart.
Yeah.
Yeah. You like, just made a tin
you made
man.
Was it a tin man that needed a heart?
Well, maybe. Yeah. He wanted to make a robot, too.
Okay.
Okay. So maybe items number 17 and 14 are actually the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the least ambitious of all, item number 17, make a universe.
Huh.
See, I think in a lot of ways, you have helped make a universe by working for a video game company.
That's true.
Because we make universes every day. Universes of the imagination, Kevin.
Yeah.
Let's look at your computer programs. That's a pretty funny one, too.
All right. So, as I might have mentioned last week, I liked to draw computers, which sometimes they would have full keyboards with like letters and numbers on them, and then there would be extra buttons for like punctuation and an entire set of buttons for each planet,
right?
Yeah. But
you had a button for go to the center of, and then you'd hit one of the buttons for one of the things in astronomy or space.
So this computer just had numbers.
This computer was just
8 buttons, which was just the numbers 1 through 8. So here are some computer programs that I wrote.
Fuck 9.
Yeah, fuck 9. Well, that didn't make a nice rectangle. all right, so so this program is these are the keys you press to program this in. It's 1357-2468. That makes him talk.
Okay.
The program 3451-2678 helps homework.
Oh.
Like helps you with homework or help?
I think so.
Like Probably, like hamburger. Probably. Is there one that helps hamburger?
Not on my list, but I'm sure there is one. Yeah, so this is... I don't exactly understand this. Levers are guns and lasers. To use them, 1, 2. So I'm thinking, okay, I think I'm describing the computer in that sentence. Like, levers and guns. Levers are guns and lasers. So there's levers on this computer, apparently.
I see, and you pull them to fire the guns and the lasers.
Well, to use the guns and lasers, I hit 1, 2, and that's
a program for activating the levers.
That is a program for activating the levers, which are guns and lasers.
Okay.
All right. The box, so I'm thinking the computer box, is battery and parts. To open, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay, the problem with that is that you can't open it without the guns going off.
Correct.
So you have to not be standing in front of, like, depending on where the battery compartment is.
Well, maybe the 1, 2 is just the fail safe that activates the levers, and then you pull a lever to lasers fire.
Yeah, I think just to be safe, you should not stand in front of those levers.
Yeah, no.
It has screens, 3, 2, 1, 5, 6.
Oh, okay. Oh. So that's the program to give it screens.
I guess, yes. Yep.
Okay.
635812 is Oregon.
I have to assume that means that you would play Oregon Trail on the computer. So
that was the sentence, is Oregon, period. And then after that, on the same line is a game.
I imagine that you probably thought of the screens thing because you're like, fuck, if this computer doesn't have a screen, how am I going to play Oregon Trail? Because that is clearly the most fun thing that a computer can do.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 6, 7, 8 is brain scan.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Do what you said is 1, 2, 5, 8, 6, 5.
So, I mean, maybe in order to get the thing to do what you said, you have to threaten it by activating the guns and then hitting those other numbers just to show that you mean business.
And then apparently I hit 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 6, 7, 8 because then I have a picture of a brain scan.
What did it reveal?
I don't know. It's got a bunch of peaks and valleys. And then it sort of it does a little ellipsis and then it picks up again.
That was where you stopped thinking.
It must have been. It must have been
sleeping or something.
It's a pretty good computer.
Yeah. On the page before that, I have this is like just out of nowhere. There's no context for this. It just says a carving or inscription on a rock, an ancient or prehistoric drawing or painting on a rock wall, a carving or inscription on a rock.
So you were defining terms, some of them multiple times without actually listing what the terms were. Okay.
Well,
that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. I will, if you ever get that universe made, I will go to it because seems like the computers in it are going to fucking
rule.
Pretty
awesome. Yeah.
That's true. Just don't stand in front of any levers.
Besides, is Oregon, have any of you been playing any games?
I played a couple games of note. There's a Japanese DS game called, let's see if I remember this properly. Nanashi no Game, which got a fan translated patch.
Do you realize that the last six letters of that say no game?
Yeah, it's okay. What it is basically a. It's not. It's hardly even a game. It's like an interactive novel kind of. The plot is almost identical to the plot of The Ring, except instead of dying 7 days after you watch a videotape, it's you die 7 days after playing this 8-bit Dragon Warrior style RPG. And so
just playing it, or do you have to beat it?
If you do not beat it, you die.
Oh,
wow. So you have 7 days to play it
from starting
to finish it, or you die.
And so the game switches between two modes. You've got the mode of you as a person wandering around in this sort of creepy world, trying to figure out what's going on and where this game came from and stuff. And then,
had you started playing the game as that character?
That's one of the first things that happens is this game gets sent to you and you check it out.
Okay.
And so it alternates between the walking around in the real world section is done holding your DS book style. And then every now and then you get the incoming beep of your game has been updated and you rotate it to DS format. Or standard DS position, and then you play this weird little game, and it's really kind of It's normal looking, but it's really glitchy, and the music is standard Dragon Warrior music, but it's just that little bit enough off and crackly that it makes it really kind of spooky. But so the story is really interesting. The gameplay is not, because the real world sections, you're just walking very slowly through hallways and okay, now I have to walk this direction because there's a zombie on the other path. And it takes way too long to get through it. But it's if you can get through that, it's pretty interesting.
The concept sounds phenomenal.
It's really, yeah, it's neat. So
are you moving around, like in the real world portion of it, are you moving around trying to find out things about the game to figure, so you're like looking for a strategy guide or whatever?
Yeah, you're trying to find the guys who developed the game who have gone missing and things like that. So that's pretty cool. If you have a DS flash cart that you can use for patching and playing pirated DS games, then that is something.
Is that only available in Japan or something?
Yeah, it was a fan translation that just got
released. Translation. Yeah. I was gonna say,
so you literally can't buy it.
Right.
Okay.
The other thing I've been playing was a guy who's, if I'm not misremembering his internet handle, it was Vechs, V-E-C-H-S, is doing a series of Minecraft adventure maps called the Super Hostile series.
Right.
And they're adventure maps, like, you know, people make their own dungeons and stuff in Minecraft, and then they post the maps and you can play them. Most of those maps are geared with eventually Minecraft, they say, will have a mode where you play these maps and you're unable to break things. So you're stuck with whatever walls the designer
like. They will make some. They will be able to make rules about what you're allowed to dig into and what you're not.
These maps are different in that the guy, I feel, has realized what I always felt about these adventure maps, that being able to break shit and build your own stuff is such an inherent part of Minecraft that taking that away makes it a little less interesting. So he's built these maps with that in mind, and you're free to break any walls you want, build anything you want, use any tricks that you want to get through this. And the way it works is there's 16 dungeons in this world, and you will eventually, as you're wandering around, also find a victory monument, which has 19 slots on it for you to put 16 blocks of different colored wool and also an iron, gold, and diamond block.
Yeah, right, and the rule is like you can't, don't use dye to make your own wool.
Right, that's
because
basically
that's
only
cheating.
Rule in
you have to find the wool ones, but the metal block, you just have to find enough metal to make it. You have to find enough diamond to do the...
Yeah.
And presumably the diamonds are like in chests and stuff, right?
There's a few in chests. The particular map I'm playing is called Sunburn Islands, which is... He designed it to be... more newbie friendly, because a lot of his other maps are like evil.
He did not
evil.
Do a particularly good job of it. I played it for about 15 minutes. I I messed around for a while and I tunneled up into that weird floating mushroom island thing. And I was like, I wonder when this is going to get somewhere. And then when it got somewhere, it was just like a tiny enclosed space filled with creepers.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay.
So some of the dungeons are rough, but some of them are a lot easier.
Like, do you start with weapons or are you?
No.
There's a chest with like a wooden sword in it.
Yeah.
Like,
you start out with like two logs, a wooden sword, and half a fishing pole and a boat on an island that's entirely made of sand. So you can't
get wood.
Yeah, exactly. So a lot of it is...
There's a couple little bushes. One of the first tricks
is all the trees on this island are sort of fake palm trees made out of fence posts with leaves at the top.
Uh-huh.
And you can break the leaves to get a sapling. And then somewhere on this island, you eventually find a single dirt
patch
block.
Of dirt? Wow.
Yeah, that you can plant a sapling on.
Jesus.
So yeah, I've been enjoying the hell out of it.
What prevents you from just getting in the boat and sailing until you find something else?
He says don't leave the area
that's
of the map.
Rule,
also,
the only other rule is don't generate your own land. Although I've sailed out to the borders and they're like giant bedrock walls. So it would be rough trying to get out to actually do that in this particular map.
Hmm. That's kind of awesome.
They're really cool.
It seems like it could be fun.
Yeah. I'm on the last dungeon now, and it's it's kind of murdering me.
I just, the inability to like quick save, you know, the just like having to run all the way. I guess it, like making a bed would be huge.
Yeah.
Right. That would just totally be like the first thing that you have to do. But like, there's no sheep anywhere.
Yeah.
There's no grass anywhere.
Yeah. There's no sheep. There's no grass. You have to, I mean, you, when you find the Victory Monument, there's a chest in there with a few beds in it. But if you run out of those beds, you're stuck making wool out of spider silk.
How'd you run out of beds?
By getting them exploded by creepers. Okay. or by leaving them somewhere that and not remembering to take them with you.
Could you, I mean, you, it sounds like you could screw yourself over by using one of the colored wool in a crafting thing.
Yeah, all the chests have like...
multiple copies of
stuff. They're single block chests and entirely filled one block per slot of wool, so it's what, 26 wool or whatever it is per box. The idea being that you only take one out of the chest and so that if you, you die getting it back, you can go get another one.
Huh.
Is the idea, oh, so you can put it on the Victory Monument and then you can just leave it there?
Yeah. Okay. The Victory Monument is a pretty safe place.
Oh man, that sounds rough.
How many hours would you say you've put into the Sunburn Islands one so far?
I couldn't say for certain.
Closer to 3, closer to 20.
Closer to 20, more like probably not as many as a dozen, but it's getting up there.
So not actually closer to 20 than 3.
Oh, yeah, I guess so.
Okay.
I guess I was thinking from the other direction.
Okay.
I was thinking August.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, it's been really fun. I've been also watching a Let's Play of another one of his maps called Legendary, which is one of his super hard mode maps. And some of the tricks that and traps that he pulls in the difficult ones are evil.
You were saying a lot of the early ones don't work very well. They're not.
Yes,
they're not 1.8 friendly.
The two that are 1.8 friendly are Sunburn Islands, and the other one I think is called Nightmare World, which is a super hard one. And all the others, you would have to downgrade to 1.73 to play them properly.
Well, like, can you give me an example of a trap or two?
Well, okay, so the two ones that I thought were really funny that I saw in this Let's Play I've been watching is the first one that he ran into was he got to this area that was like nicely wooded and it's like, all right, I can actually set up a decent base here and here's a little building I can make a base in. And he goes in and it's been set up with like ready-made farmland so that you can plant some wheat and shit. And it's like, oh sweet, I'll just set up in here. He went to planted some seeds on one of these sections. The act of doing that caused the nearby blocks to update, which caused free-floating sand blocks placed under those blocks to fall onto TNT, and the TNT made up like an entire floor level underneath this building and just destroyed everything. The other one that I thought was really funny was he found a minecart rail going off in the distance. And he was like, all right, this looks suspicious. And he started looking around and saw a short distance away, like two TNT blocks sitting there. And he was like, oh, all right, I see how this works. If I put the cart on this track, that's going to activate that TNT. So let's see what I can do to prevent this. He hops down to get closer to the TNT and lands on the pressure plate that's connected to the TNT.
Dope.
Yeah.
Huh.
So his he calls them ROM hack hard. So the ones that he has made that way are vicious. But Sunburn Islands has been pretty friendly so far.
That it?
Yep, that was it.
What about you, Kevin?
Mostly iOS stuff. I beat to my satisfaction the entirety of Tower Defense Lost Earth. So I beat every level, most of them on hard with full lives. That game is just good. That is just a solid game. If it came out with more levels, I would like pay for that content pack. And then I got Cut the Rope, which is old as sin,
I
guess.
Played a lot of that.
Your girlfriend had been playing it for months, right?
Yeah, she'd off and on. She'd play it.
No, like literally, she had been sitting there for like her
she's just a
her
skeleton.
Funding dried up. Yeah, she's a skeleton with a beard, still playing Cut the Rope.
And so yeah, I got that, and then like it seemed like it was gonna be a ton of content because it's like, you know, 200 some levels or whatever.
Yeah, but they're
and,
all kind of the same.
Yeah, and like I got 100% completion with all 3 stars on every level in like 3 hours.
Jeez.
So I was just like, okay, well, that was the thing.
You're a madman.
Well, I like puzzles.
Yeah.
So, I felt like that one was so much easier than like Angry Birds because it was just, there were only like, on any given level, there'd be like four or five things you could do.
Yeah.
Every once in a while, there would be something that required like some tricky timing.
Yeah, for no, cutting. Sure. There were definitely some things that were trickier, but some like a lot of levels I would just solve in like 15, 20 seconds.
That was
seconds,
kind of the I problem mean, I had with it. I prefer a puzzle game where timing is not an issue.
Yeah. Having to figure out like having to anticipate like when there's multiple ropes tied to something, having to figure out what its movement is going to be like when you cut a single one of them, and like figure out what order to cut them all in.
The penalty for trying stuff is so low. You just start cutting stuff and seeing what happens, and then if that doesn't work out, you just go back and try it again. Yeah, you know, it's like super.
Maybe you've wasted your time.
Well,
you failed.
You
felt like
potentially
a big stupid
dummy. You waste less time by just sort of learning by experimentation in that way.
Sure.
Then just trying to figure it all out.
I waste less time by just not playing that.
That's also true. That is a distinct strategy. I'm kind of hung up on Tiny Heroes. I'm like on the third level of the gauntlet, and it is just brutally hard. And I've been stuck on that for like a week, so I don't know if I can make further progress on that. And then I got this game called Naught, N-A-U-G-H-T, for the iPhone that I probably will not. It was like a free trial, which is like the first four or five levels. And it's kind of just a sort of moodier, shitty version of Rolando, where it's, you know, it's like a tilt the device to get around the world kind of thing. But it's just, the controls are just bad. Using the accelerometer is just not a good, if that's your only control in the game.
Well,
it's just
Rolando was pretty good.
Rolando was pretty good, but it would be frustrating at times. And it was, I think the level design was very careful. And this one, the level design is not nearly as thoughtful. And it's just obnoxious. Hmm. There was one part where like you could come in from either the left or the right of a sort of like a Y or of a T junction, and getting into the sort of central branch was super, super hard because the accelerometer just does not have that fine of control in this particular game's sort of understanding of that sort of control structure or whatever. So I can't recommend it. It was interesting, but you know, and it's free, so that, you know, there's no harm in trying it out, but yeah, it's not worth buying, I don't think. Hmm. What about you?
Binding of Isaac. It's pretty much nice. It.
How many times have you beaten it?
Just once.
Yeah.
I beat it once, and then I played one more time, got to one of the horsemen who just raped me.
Really?
And then I just kind of put it down. But I was like, it's
so
weird.
When you say you beat it once, that means that you that it sort of unlocks the actual completion of it?
Yeah, which has a couple more levels available
time,
and a couple
every
more
time
bosses.
You beat it, I think it adds some more stuff.
It keeps getting harder
as you
beat it.
What? Wait, so the entire game gets harder and they keep adding more levels or whatever?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there
and different objects that you can potentially find?
Is there an end to that?
Eventually, I guess you'll unlock everything, but then Halloween, he's adding a bunch of new stuff.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
I really, really like this game a lot. Like,
yeah.
I did not find myself really ever playing it twice in a row, unless I got killed really quickly.
It's really
a snack sort of game. I would play it, and then when I would sit down to do something else, I'd be like, I could play another game of Binding of Isaac.
Yep.
Like, it got to the point where every time my girlfriend heard the music, she was like making fun of me for,
oh,
like,
God,
you're
the
playing
music
it again.
So much.
It is really good.
I've been listening to most of when I've been doing work. When I work, I like to listen to music, but it can't be anything with lyrics. So I do a lot of game soundtracks, and it's been mostly the Binding of Isaac and Bastion soundtracks for a long time.
The Bastion soundtrack is good.
Yeah.
It's got that kind of banjo-y
deal. That sort of space cowboy kind of feel.
I would probably buy the Binding of Isaac soundtrack.
You may have gotten it free with the Steam thing. I don't know. It depends on the package you got.
It's a good game, though. I was not super sold on it the first couple times I played it, but it gets into you. It gets its claws in you, and Kevin had said that you were really put off by the sort of like scatological.
Your descriptions of the theming just had me just completely uninterested.
It's gross, but it's cute gross.
It's gross in a really. It is in like a creepy way. It is like you are exploring the sort of like
psychology,
the subconscious horror of like a 3-year old.
Which
and so like
that,
all
the,
he knows
when
about
when you put it
is,
in that context, it made it's a lot more interesting.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Like without that context, I was just like, this sounds super juvenile and uninteresting. But if it's sort of more thoughtful than that.
It is extremely thoughtful and moody. It is not it is not like a gross out thing at all.
Yeah,
it is like a it is a it is a sort of like a genuinely disturbing
yeah
The imagery is genuinely disturbing.
Especially every like permanent pickup you get alters your character, and they all stack. So as you play, your character turns into more and more horrific of this sort of monster.
You can find a coat hanger, and then you're walking around with a coat hanger, like with your head impaled on a coat hanger. Like you keep finding things that like you start to kind of piece together what is going on in the real world as a result of like finding parts of your dead pets and stuff. Like it is really horrifying.
There's one of the speed boost pickups is a wooden spoon, and when you get it, your face and head are covered with like spoon shaped welts.
This is really disturbing.
It is.
Yeah, it is. But it's done in this like really cartoony style.
God.
So it's yeah.
That's messed up.
It's neat. It's really well done. I was not a big fan of Super Meat Boy, really. Like it was like
I never even tried it, but reading and hearing about it, it was like there's no way that's a game for me.
Like
it just sounded brutal.
I had already played N Plus, so I didn't feel like I needed to play Super Meat Boy. Like I didn't really feel like there was anything. Like I played a demo of it, and it was just like, eh, okay. This is not really adding anything to this. Like I don't mind a super hard platformer if it's the like this is a super hard platformer where you die instantly on respawning. Like N Plus was just awesome. Like me and Aaron, who was on the show last week, we spent hours playing a bunch of the co-op levels on the 360, like the Xbox Live Arcade version of N Plus, and it was like so difficult but so satisfying when we would get done with it that's like it's just this like really positive.
And it had,
video
did
game
have like instant respawn.
Yeah.
Okay. That was pretty much what got me through VVVVVV was the speed at which that you try again.
So Binding of Isaac. I played a little bit. What I did was I realized that I am really glad that I didn't get rid of my DS because I tried to play that that Aliens Metroidvania game on the 3DS.
Yeah.
And does it always display DS games at like a non-native resolution on the monitor? Because
I couldn't say.
It looked horrible.
Really?
Like it looks horrible in a way that things look horrible to me that don't bother anybody else.
Huh.
Like the way that I hate it when like fonts on the monitor are anti-aliased in small type, like for just reading stuff on the screen. But my DS was just on a shelf with no battery for, you know, a year, but I grabbed my girlfriend's and put the game in it, and it just looked so much better on
the DS. I haven't
tried
it in the regular DS, so maybe I'll check that out. Although, on the other hand, I feel like the circle pad on the 3DS is so nice for controlling it that I'm not sure I would want to give that up.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, maybe there's a setting somewhere that you can toggle to just make it smaller
on
the screen, run it at the native resolution, but man, it was difficult to look at. It was driving me nuts.
You are a lot more sensitive to that.
To stuff being a non-native.
Compared to anybody else I know, probably.
Yeah.
I don't know. It bugs me when stuff is blurry.
Hmm.
I like pixels. I like being able... I was really scared of the iPhone 4 because I was like, if I can't see the pixels, it's not going to look good. But like not being able to see the pixels at all is great. Seeing pixels and seeing that they are shitty is awful. we have not been playing very much. We had promised a longer listener mail segment, which we will do after the next couple of segments. But cool. Announcing what we're doing.
Woohoo!
Now I'm going to hit the button to take a break. So world.
Yeah.
What's up in the world?
The most interesting thing that happened this past week was
objectively.
Yes.
Is it more interesting than the least interesting Pokemon?
It is. Was the announcement of Activision Skylanders?
An announcement? I think it seems to be out based on the Penny Arcade comic about it today.
Yeah, or like the sort of the not the announcement, I guess, the revelation of like how it all works, which is you get the game and a couple of like toy figurines, which then store in some way information about your state in the game.
Hmm. State specific to that character, because I think your intention is that all these characters have different powers and abilities and that you're going to be switching between them as you play.
Yeah.
From the description in the Penny Arcade stuff, it was like it there, you go into levels that it's like, oh, you know who would be really good in this level is this other guy that you need to go and pay $8 for at Walmart. Or and you find a power up for a character that you don't own, which really makes you want to go buy that.
Can get through the main, you can get through the entire main thread of the game with just the initial characters, but there are a lot of locked off extra levels and areas that you can only get to.
I did not know that.
How does it even work? Is the game cheap, or is the game
$70
free? Wait, really?
Yeah.
I feel like it's $70, but it comes with three figurines.
Okay.
It's the game is $70 with three figurines.
And like the base that you need to.
What platform is it for?
360 Wii. And PC and Wii.
And PlayStation.
Oh, and there's a DS version too.
There's all kinds of different.
Huh, and can you move platforms. Can you move your characters across?
I believe
between platforms. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Do you think that it's actually storing anything on those characters, or do you think it's just like an RFID
that's keyed to an online database? When we were talking about it earlier, it seems like that is also the way it could do, is only be reading the serial number off of these figurines and then storing all the character information server side.
I mean, that's a way that, like, because if you just put it on top of a thing and it talks to it, it would make sense for that to be RFID, because I don't think they're going to want
batteries
inside the things, and it's not getting any power.
Well, I mean, it could.
Well, RFID is getting power from
charge things by putting them on bases.
Well, okay.
Proximal chargers and stuff like that.
Is that like a thing that exists? That a tech that's advanced enough that it would be in this toy?
I don't know. Why not?
Sure, I guess.
It probably doesn't require a lot of power, you know.
I mean, so I guess the disadvantage of doing it just the key way is that you have to be connected to the internet in order to play. But like, everybody's connected to the internet.
DS is not.
If there's the DS version, then
the DS is connected.
You have to set up the whole Wi-Fi thing. Huh.
I don't know. It's far more optional on the DS than it is on the other.
It's interesting in a bunch of ways, right? So they're bridging this gap between toys and video games in a very tangible, very immediate way, which I'm curious how that's going to pan out.
This is in the Spyro universe?
Yeah. That's my understanding.
Josh used to talk about how great Spyro was, and you had said that you liked it too. I thought of it as
the original game once, and it was fun.
I thought of it as like a kid's game and just something that I wouldn't be
interested. The art style never spoke to me.
But I have no problem with kid style stuff. There was like a...
Yeah, I don't normally either, but for some reason this particular kid's art style kind of...
It looked like Barney, you know? It looked like like My Little Pony or something. Like it struck me as a thing
My Little Dragon.
Like not even this is a kid's game, but like this is a game for babies.
Binding of Isaac is for babies.
Sure. Mid-abortion babies.
What else? Yeah. There we got. So apparently, there's some sort of pirate cart bundle, which is like 100 different little small indie developers. They all had a bunch of different games and stuff like that they didn't feel were finished enough or like polished enough or good enough. I don't know. I didn't see a bunch of details about it. I just read about it just before the show. But they packaged it up and like there's like 300 different games, and I don't know how the pricing structure is.
So you don't know how much it costs.
Yep. I did a bad job of getting information on this.
Excellent story. We'll have to run this by the fact checkers later before we broadcast this.
Yeah.
And Lord British's house is for sale.
Yeah. 4.1 million.
It was weird. He didn't say anything about planning on selling his house. He married this woman. He changed his last name as a result of marrying this woman.
It's not British anymore.
It is Richard Garriott de Caillou.
Yeah.
Weird.
Like, he did some weird thing where you take your wife's last name as an affix to your own last name.
But she was in New York.
Yeah, she lives in New York, and he was spending like half of his time living in New York and probably getting tired of like living in a place that he was perfectly happy and maintaining this massive property in the middle of Texas.
Yeah. It was weird because he talked a lot about how he'd spent a lot of money and time getting it sort of much more compliant.
He came back from space and he was all like, this sucks. We got to save the environment. And I'm going to do that by spending tens of thousands of dollars on LED light bulbs to replace all the light bulbs in this house. And then he was like, oh, fuck, that didn't do anything.
Yeah, like, almost all of his energy usage was from his
pumping water and watering his lawn. Yeah, it was crazy. He had this awesome thing on his iPhone that like was hooked up to all of the, there was like transmitters hooked up on all the circuits in
he had
house?
He had a live feed,
like a live feed
when
of
we
what
were in Atlanta. He
in
had a live
house.
Feed of like all the power usage in his nice. House back in Austin.
Yeah, which I feel like that rig is actually not that expensive. Like this is not like a thing that you can only get if you've been to space after making Ultima.
Sure,
you know?
It's probably not super cheap though.
Is it? Could he see like surveillance cam footage?
No, I don't think so.
Well,
I think it was just like
we did not ask.
We didn't. Yeah, maybe he does. But he had cameras in all the bathrooms
and in the dungeon.
Yeah, so he could keep up on his wenches and his hunchbacked minions. I don't think his house would be nearly as cool without all of his stuff in it, though.
There's cool secret passages.
Yeah,
and stuff,
there's secret
right?
passages. And
yeah, he's taking the secret
traps.
Passages with him. And they're gonna start to lead to different places in New York. He's gonna have like a pole that he can slide down in his apartment uh-huh. in New York and land in Central Park.
Oh, nice! It's gonna
be fucking weird.
It's awesome.
Yeah, you start moving topology around, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that I remember seeing this thing.
Isn't this the reason that you decided to go into making video games?
Yeah,
that's so.
I can't afford it. I should buy it. I should figure out a way to buy that house. You want to move to Austin? You guys want to move to Austin and I'll live in Richard Garriott's mansion?
If it meant living in Richard Garriott's mansion, I would totally move to Austin. I think that is what it would take, but...
I don't know if there's enough room on the walls for all of your maps.
That is a problem.
I mean, he's taking away all of his maps.
The house is surprisingly ugly.
You could just
from
leave
the Ultima
maps up. Yeah.
It's on the inside, the house is all crazy cool looking, but on the outside, it's just, it kind of looks like a boring, like sort of
it
pink
does look
house.
It kind of drab.
Like it is weird. The grounds are probably pretty neat. Yeah. I don't know. It's on a hill.
Yeah, I saw the article I was looking at had a link to a sort of photographic tour of it, and it showed some pretty nice pictures of the grounds and stuff.
I wonder if the Austin Magic Booze force field extends that far out. Like, I wonder if we would just be shitty drunk after like three beers inside. Lord British's house.
Yeah, I wish I knew what it was about Austin that anytime we went there, we got stupid drunk off of relatively little alcohol.
Yeah.
If it was at like 10,000 feet over sea level, that would make some sense, but it's not.
Maybe there's some weird like space-time vortex that makes it actually about like...
Oh, because it's just like an oxygen in the atmosphere thing.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. That could be. It could just be extremely low. It could just be a low oxygen city.
Maybe fucking Garriott is using up all the oxygen for his crazy space tanks.
Yeah, that's where he got all the oxygen needed to go into space.
Yeah, in fact, global warming will totally go away once Garriott doesn't have this house anymore. It's going to be awesome. So, fucking Psychonauts. Boy, did I fall out of love with that game in a hurry.
Yeah, Kevin and I were surprised by that.
I was really looking forward to it. I stopped.
I loved it all the way up to the end where I still cannot beat the meat circus. But
I got frustrated with the meat circus, but I got frustrated with it because I was also trying to collect all the figments along the way. Mm. And doing that on a time-limited sort of run through a really hard sort of... 3D maze kind of thing was just driving me nuts, but then that section is actually relatively short, and then it's just pretty trivial after that.
Try again and finish it up.
Yeah, and also if I had known in retrospect, you could just finish the like particularly hard section with figments in it,
and then go back and
collect all the figments when there's no time limit.
You guys had me really looking forward to the levels in the asylum. So I got to the place that I turned the game off was right after landing on the island with the asylum.
Yeah, so you had just finished Lungfish Opus, which is some of the most,
it was awesome.
The most
it was,
amazing
it was great.
Video game.
And you know what?
Ever.
Trivial to beat. Like easy. It was like fun. Interesting environment to play around in. Yep. There were like, I could see like, okay, well, if I wanted to come back and get all of the figments in here, it would be kind of challenging to get to all these places. But in general, I'm just playing through this story. So then I quit for a week. I come back a week later and I'm just stuck, like completely stuck. I cannot figure out how to get a level to start when I get to this thing.
And I had a similar experience. I was like, what do I do now? And I looked all over the place and was very confused.
And there were some like places to go that don't fucking go anywhere that make you think that maybe you're just missing something.
So because the previous experience of flying into somebody's head through that door and then stealing that door from Saucer's Nine's lab.
It had happened too long ago for me to think about. Like,
you didn't make, didn't make that connection.
So I'd been playing this game where the levels are you going into people's heads, and at no point prior to this had it required me to use an item in my inventory to start the level.
Didn't you have to do it to get into the lungfish's head?
I don't remember if you did or not. You didn't have to figure out to do it. Like, it's possible that Krueller says, like, that the quest log thing says use the door on the lungfish to go into its head,
right?
Whereas the quest log says figure out how to get into the asylum. And so I just, so like at that point I had to come and ask you, like, what the fuck am I supposed to do? And you were like, use an item in your inventory. I was like, oh, okay. It didn't even occur to me because my inventory is not a thing that I've had to do anything with ever.
That, I mean, I think because I didn't use the bacon until, I don't know, some point in the asylum, and then I was like, oh man, this is actually really useful. I could have been using this a lot, because there were like, I was working on the Napoleon level, and I was like, these enemies are driving me fucking crazy. And then I was just kind of pissed, and I just tried the bacon, and then I found that whole section of here's how to defeat enemies that you're fighting, and I was like, oh Jesus, that this is so handy.
Yeah.
I think what happened is because I essentially consulted a walkthrough to get through that by talking to you. The next time I got stuck, I didn't deal with it for nearly as long, and I just started going to a walkthrough.
Walkthroughs are always a terrible slippery slope.
And I had to check a walkthrough 6 times to get through the goddamn milkman level. And some of it was, so this is a question. Like, I did not realize that you could walk past the guys with the plungers. Like,
the first time I encountered them, you go down
this street, and it's like, oh, there are guys with plungers. I need a plunger to go past here. And then I turned around to look for the plunger.
The first time you encounter a barrier, you have to have an item to get past it. So this is very similar to that.
And the barrier does not go all the way across the road. Right. Admittedly,
you have to recognize that there is shit in the way.
There is shit piled up to make it seem like the game is stopping you from going this direction. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I had to consult a walkthrough, it was like, go around the guys with the plungers. I'm like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
And that is the game's fault. I cannot look at that and feel like that was a failure of me as a player. Mm-hmm. That just makes me feel like the game, like, it was just badly done. Like, they could have made the square smaller.
To be fair, they could have
made the road wider. They could have made it clear that you could walk past.
So here's the thing, right? Like, you want to put obstacles in the way of your players reaching the end goal because you want them to have some experiences along the way. Otherwise, it's just here's the goal. You're done. Right?
So at this point, the game developed the like point and click adventure problem, right? Where you are presented with locks. But since the puzzle is figuring out what the key is, you don't know if it's a lock that you can open or not. Right? Like, this was in a lot of ways what made, in my mind, Myst a significantly better game than Riven. Which was, in Myst, you basically didn't need stuff from random other places in order to solve the puzzles. Like, you'd go into the book, The Age, and it was self-contained.
Well, I mean,
right? But with Riven, you would run into all these puzzles and have no idea if it was possible for you to solve them. And there is, like, nothing more frustrating to me than hammering on a puzzle and then finding out, once I give up and look at how to do it, that, oh, you're not supposed to be solving this puzzle yet. Like, the problem is that you can't actually solve this puzzle.
And there was some of that. I mean, you have to realize to, like, use the mind reading skill, whatever it's called.
Oh yeah, every time you needed to do that, I got stuck and had to use a walkthrough.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like the agents didn't really have that problem because you knew immediately just upon seeing them what object you needed.
Right,
to
sure.
Get past
I knew them. That I needed a plunger, and I assumed that in order to progress down that path, I needed a plunger. Not that the plunger was like the last step in the chain,
so,
and that I could go around that part to access an entire additional 2/3 of the level.
It is also possible to break sequence there, which I did. I got the plunger. I got the plunger before I got the bouquet.
Huh.
So I was able to go down into that thing and be like, the rifle, like, how the fuck am I supposed to get that or whatever?
Yeah, I guess that is possible. Huh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I stopped playing halfway through that for several days. So I took a break and then came back and was outside the house with the plunger. So I got that and then was like, what the hell do I do? And that's also when that you get attacked by that nightmare for the first time.
Yeah, that was
I came out of nowhere.
That just made me angry. I didn't. I was like, this was just that filler. This is just a thing that
it wasn't really explained.
Unrelated to anything. Yeah. And
if there had been some reason given for it, I would have been more satisfied by that. But there didn't seem to be any logic to that happening.
Because I had found the hidden room in Mila's place, it made sense to me.
Okay.
But if you hadn't found that, like, I think Zach, you didn't find that. Like, that's the first time you even see that kind of enemy, and you're like, what the hell is going on?
Yeah. So after consulting this walkthrough all these times, I finally beat the Milkman level, and it was awesome. I really liked the agents. I really liked the writing. I really liked the stuff that was going on, and the cutscenes were awesome. So then I get to the opera thing, which I just found completely boring and just entirely opaque.
I mean, I didn't think the writing in there was any great shakes, but I thought that the mechanics of how that level worked and the nature of the puzzle was pretty interesting.
I kind of enjoyed seeing the little story and stuff.
It was cute, but it was no Milkman.
Sure. I never would have figured out to jump onto the boat to get the scene to advance to another piece of scenery that you'd never seen. Like, I just would never have figured that out.
Because you weren't bothering to collect the figments.
Yeah. And then I got up to the hot air balloon or whatever, and then got onto the catwalks, and I got so pissed off trying to make it to the top of the catwalks that I just quit. And I don't think that I'm ever going to go back, because
That's weird, because I count myself as someone who is terrible at platformers, and I had no trouble with the catwalks.
There is one jump that I just don't understand, because I can't get the camera at an angle where I can see what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I get to this jump, there were like some trapezes and like one of those opening and closing mouths that you have to fly through. Every time I try to jump off of it, I just fall straight down, not to my death, where I would respawn to right there to try this particular jump again, but like a minute earlier and 40 careful jumps earlier. And I'm just like,
that happened. Going up the tower at the end, it was bad there. I had like a couple of save files going so that if I, because there's, it was not, the game was not checkpointed live, but it was checkpointed in your saves. So if you, like, there's that one point where you have to, near where the one full core thing is, there's like a bed that you have to jump on and then catch a walkway nearby, and if you save near there, it puts you back like very close to that.
So
whenever I was falling down the center of the tower and going hugely way backwards, I just reloaded back to that bed.
Okay.
And that was, there was that possible for me to get through it without breaking something.
There was one point where missing a jump consistently respawned me at a point where the camera was stuck behind like an opaque curtain that was black. Also, why the fuck was that level so dark?
The
opera level. Jumping around in the stands and stuff, you could not see anything. And I turned the brightness up all the way. Like, I did what I always do when it says, turn this down until you can just see this thing, which is I move it until I can see the thing. Yeah. Right, pretty clearly. And it was still, like, it was so dark that you could not tell where the platforms were that were, like, the stands.
Well, I guess that
were
just
full of figments,
dark,
right?
Dark theater theming.
But sure, yeah, but it can be dark. I mean, make it dark with the choice of colors. Don't make it just literally so dark that you
can't potentially hate
see.
The Black Velvet level, because there is a bunch of stuff in there that is hard to see because it's just black on black.
Yeah.
Glowing neon on black.
Yeah. Yeah.
It looks so cool, though.
It does look really cool.
So I'm no longer confused about why this game didn't do well.
That sucks, man. I super loved the game. Like, yeah, I played through it, you know, and I am extremely patient with games. So that's
right. So that's part of it. I mean, I think that this is a deeply flawed masterpiece. Right. There is stuff about it that is great, but it's like, in a lot of ways, as a work of art, I think it is great. As a video game, I think it is like, I'm worried that our next assignment is gonna have this same problem, because thinking back on it, so the moment-to-moment gameplay of Psychonauts is like totally different in like 15-minute segments, right? It's sure. it's like kind of it's every kind of game, mm. right? There is only, like mm. there is so little yeah. fighting. Like you'll go an hour of gameplay without ever punching anything. You know, like you there'll just be huge sections where you're not fighting. So that whole subsystem of the game, you're not practicing. You know, you're not doing anything. Like sections where you don't really have to jump much, right? Like sections where you're talking to people or whatever. It is essentially a collection of mini games, right? In that there are short bursts of dramatically different kinds of gameplay.
Yeah.
And you have to play them all, and some of them are super fucking hard. And I think that's just that is a flaw in it. Because there are so many things that if you are bad at them, you cannot progress in this game, right? There are certain things like
so it's like life.
Sure. Because like because I'm no good at basketball, I didn't get to graduate from junior high.
Yeah, that's true.
Like that's exactly you're right. It's exactly like life.
It is exactly like
because there's no specialization or anything. Like you have to be good at everything, yep. or it doesn't progress. Yeah, yep. It sucks.
That's why we're sitting here alone on a Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
there's a lot of things wrong with that sentence. Yeah. So, keeping with our theme of critical success, popular failure, we're gonna do Beyond Good and Evil for the next assignment.
There are two things that I wanted to mention about Psychonauts before we moved on. I loved the attention to like tiny details that you might not even ever notice, like just all the little like cutscenes and stuff like that you wouldn't see. Unless you happen to wander into this thing at the right time. Like there was just, that was all over the place. Mm-hmm. There was on the Napoleon level, which is had you in, involves going down into like a game board. It's like three different scales. There is a place where you can see into the room that you start in. So it's like this infinite recursion thing.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't notice that.
Yeah. It is so awesome.
The one, my favorite part of that level is, jumping into the castle. And Napoleon
at the very beginning. Yeah.
And then Napoleon having to tell you, no, you idiot, you have to move your knight into there to win.
Yeah. And then something I really wished one of you had beaten the game, because there is a place where you get to make this sort of binary decision about trying to jump on this like really difficult series of platforms or whatever, or just like hopping on this ladder that takes you to the end. And I was like, I was trying the hard stuff for a while, and I was like, this is really hard. And so I just jumped on the ladder, and it just takes you to the end. And he's like, you didn't do that right. You cheated. And he's like, I'm here. And the game keeps going. And I'm like, what? So was there, could I have gone the other way? I don't even know. And that's why I want to know what was that was all about. Because the ladder goes a long, long way, and there's a bunch of stuff that you are just skipping.
Hmm.
And I'm like,
Yeah, that could just be a joke. I liked how every character had something they would say if you set them on fire.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
they recorded dialogue for everything that you could do to every character yep. in yep. the game ever.
Picking them up with the telekinesis.
Yeah. There was one point at which I watched this thing out of a vault and I thought, what the hell was that? And then the character says,
yes,
what
yes.
the hell was that? like, huh, that was pretty cool.
They have an iPad app.
That is all the vault.
Yeah.
Stuff.
That is all the vault viewers with director commentary.
Oh, nice. Huh.
Yeah.
I think that I might break my habit of never watching a let's play of mm-hmm. anything and just watch a let's play of this and see the rest
there
of
is,
it.
There is one on lparchive.org of it that's like 100% run.
Yeah, I got 100% on everything.
Nice.
Yeah, so. I ran out of patience. I ran out of patience for the game's flaws, and I feel like I have not done the reading for an assignment. Like, I feel guilty about not playing this game, but I feel so angry when I try to play it that it's just, I'm like, this is supposed to be fun, right? Like, but maybe it's not supposed to be fun. Maybe it is supposed to be edifying. As a person in this career, maybe I need to play this in order to fully comprehend how I should never make something like this.
I think your standard for fun is stricter than a lot of people's.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I did not have a lot of the same problems that you seem to be having.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, we definitely have a lot of different problems with it, which strikes me as a, like, I really wonder what the playtesting was like for this. Like, because, so it reminds me of, like, Brutal Legend, right? Where Brutal Legend comes out and everybody's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are we supposed to do with this? And Tim Schafer's like, you're playing it wrong. Like, the entirety of the public cannot be the first person who told him that. Right? So, like, what...
I really wish I could just play through all of Brutal Legend and just skip the RTS stuff, because everything other than that was pretty awesome.
It's not supposed to be an RTS game, though.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're playing it wrong.
Whatever you want to call it.
Right, but that's the issue, right?
Like, that is the issue, and I'm curious, why there is such a disconnect.
Does Schaefer... Like, it seems like all of the... Every video game's auteur has something that they just consistently fuck up, right? and like, Molyneux is like, stop telling people about all this amazing shit that this game is going to do that's not actually going to happen. And Schaefer's is maybe, like, just not paying attention to people who are playtesting, or, like, doing all the playtesting himself and being, like, really good at platforming. And so
in
it's
the
like,
credits,
oh,
it said, you know, that they had a small army of playtesters. So who knows?
Maybe they were all one. Maybe they were all mutes.
Or they were just little green plastic army men.
They weren't allowed to talk.
Maybe the original game was much harder.
Yeah, sure. That could have been.
So, okay, so then our next assignment is Beyond Good and Evil.
Yeah. It there is not a Mac version, but it's old enough that it should run in
crossover.
Maybe. I did not see a bunch of success with it.
It is also available online as an HD remake, as a download on PlayStation Network.
Okay, I think there are versions of it for, like, every console.
Yeah.
And you can probably get it for $10.
Yeah.
Now. I'll post this before the episode airs so that people
can start
get a head start on it. We might do 2 weeks for it if we feel like it. It's a pretty long game. It came out around the same time as Psychonauts, and it's similar. Like, I've played it more than I played Psychonauts before this assignment, so
it's got a lot more vehicle in it than Psychonauts did.
Yeah,
but
got a lot more talking pig.
Yeah,
yeah. Beyond Good and Evil. See you there. Hey, so how about that extra long listener mail segment that we promised people last week when we didn't do a listener mail segment?
Okay.
I don't know where I got to in this forum thread thing before. The number that I wrote down as the last one was definitely not the last one, but we're somewhere on the next to last page. So I think I'm just going to start at the end of the forum thread and go backwards.
Ooh.
And then this is as far as we're going to get. Like, I'm gonna lock this forum thread, make a new questions forum thread after doing this.
Okay.
Eudoxa says, I've started playing Magic the Gathering again after a 16-year break. Yikes. What's really got me hooked right now is Magic Online, but I'm still trying to decide about how I feel about Wizards of the Coast with regards to how they peddle their virtual goods. It'd be great if you could pay something like $20 a month to play Magic Online, but that with that $20 you had access to all the cards and as many drafts as you want, level playing field, etc. Of course, this is not how their business model works. You have to buy virtual packs at the same price as real packs. On the one hand, they've continued to produce an incredibly high quality product year after year, so maybe they put the gobs of money that they make back into the game to ensure its quality. On the other, sometimes Wizards of the Coast seems like a money hungry corporate magic crack dealer, which might just be the Hasbro influence. Do you guys have any opinions about all this?
So
I've read articles and editorials by the guys that actually make it, and I feel like their hearts are definitely in the right place.
Yeah, like they want to make a game that's good.
Yeah. And it's definitely quite possible that Hasbro is the evil force.
Well, but you are buying virtual cards at the exact same price as real cards?
Yeah, Magic Online is I don't think it shouldn't exist, but I think it's bullshit. I would never cash out for real cards.
Yeah,
if you get a complete set.
Oh, okay.
Which that's cracky. That is really
because, like, they're like, we don't want to assemble partial sets. We can give you complete sets, which are easy for us to hand out.
Sure, maybe that's
that's probably
maybe that's why they do it. Maybe because most people will never do that if they make it so hard. You know, I don't know how
can
I feel.
Can you trade? You can trade.
Yeah,
cards?
You can trade. You can trade. You can buy. You know, I'm sure there's auctions that you can buy and sell individual cards. At some point they made the decision that if they were going to stay viable, they needed to move to Type 2 and get people to take Type 2 seriously as the primary competitive environment, where you could only play with cards from the previous year.
Right.
Right. And doing that ensured, like, I'm sure a lot of people said, oh, that's just some money grubbing bullshit. But doing that made it so the game still exists.
It makes it
right.
Like, if they had to continually be balancing every card against every card that ever existed, it just becomes way too much of a nightmare.
They would have been so constrained in what they were able to put out that nobody would want to buy it, and that I think the game would not still exist if they hadn't moved to that model. And so I think people,
or maybe it would be super awesome.
Yeah, maybe it would be super awesome. I think at the end of the day, that I don't know. It was like Richard Garfield. We saw him talk at Dragon Con, and he seems really awesome. And he seems to approach magic the way that I would approach magic. And like, he was really excited about the ante aspect of it. And he likes to, the way that he likes to play magic is just playing with a random selection of cards that everybody draws from. You know, which sounds awesome.
The idea of like just making the most out of, instead of
making the decks was the fun part.
Well, instead of making like these crazy killer decks, just the idea of making the most with what you've got. Like playing that game where we just put all, we put like, you know,
Like Josh had never played Magic, so at one of the, at maybe like a Gen Con, we just bought like five of the pre-built starter decks, and we just played some games of Magic, and then they left. They're like, yeah, we're never going to play this again. And we took all of those cards, made them into one giant stack, and then just played like three-player games, like all night. We just played, all drawing out of the same library.
Yeah.
And it was fun, you know? It was just like, it was just fucking around. It was like turning Magic into Mario Party.
Yeah.
Yeah, reading like Mark Rosewater's column, like I feel like those guys are good guys. I feel like the guys that are making Magic cards are
they
good dudes that just they want to make a fun game, and that, you know, it's important to them that it be balanced, and it's important to them that like the competitive environment and the casual environment are both served by what they're doing. And like that's all you can ask for, right? I mean, that I think that at this point they're far enough removed from the realities of the business, just because of that one decision that has kind of given them this built-in money faucet, that they just don't have to worry about it anymore. Like, they don't have to make a card so that someone will buy it, right? Yeah. They just, like, have to make a card that's cool.
It does seem like the Magic Online virtual card should not cost as much as regular cards.
I mean, though, you know, that's my whole e-books shouldn't cost as much as regular books.
And
but, that, you know,
that's obviously not Mark Rosewater's fault. I mean, whatever suit and tie guy made that decision.
If people are willing to pay for it, then maybe that's the price that they should be. And that's, I guess, you know, hell if I don't.
Yeah, I knew a guy, I worked with a guy who was really into it.
Just the virtual online
and
play.
Did not mind at all, because I mean,
so
I
you,
think
you they like theoretically you own those cards and they are part of your account or whatever.
Yeah, I would rather like if I had to pick, right? So it's like, do I buy physical cards and have to go somewhere with like fat dudes with BO if I ever want to play this, or do I pay the same amount to be able to play an infinite number of games at any time I want?
Yeah,
right. Like, you start to get the value out of it being online.
Yeah, no, there's definitely something to be said for that.
But I think it is something that you inherently want to reject. You want to reject those cards being the same price.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that's a thing we've talked about in general in terms of ebooks and stuff, about how it does not seem like a virtual good should cost as much as a physical good.
I mean, I think you can extend that indefinitely and make it so it doesn't seem like a virtual good should cost anything, right? I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think that's a lot of people's argument for stealing music and movies and stuff like that, is it just doesn't feel like stealing when it's not a physical
thing. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't cost them anything to make that card, so why isn't Magic the Gathering Online free? Well, because like it does cost them something to maintain the infrastructure,
and to come up with the cards in the first place. Yeah. They've got to pay a bunch of people's salaries and stuff.
Graythin writes, listen to Video Games Hot Dog, and I like the show. Go you guys. After listening, I figured I would try the games you talked about and started with Warlight. While it seemed interesting at first, once I got to the full map, it seemed overly dependent on initial placement. First time I tried it, I started in Northeastern Asia and got crushed. Next, I started in Northern Europe and got crushed. Finally, I started in Southern Africa, took Antarctica, and was simultaneously pushing north on all fronts, and I crushed them. So the question, is the game more interesting than it seems based on my three playthroughs, or have I seen the spread? I didn't play much of it, so
I got crushed with my initial placement as well. So I kind of gave up on it. I'm curious. Like, you know, it seems like an interesting idea for a game, but I have not had a chance to really give it much thought. There are parts of just the structure of it that I didn't like, which was like it's a three stage thing where you like say where you're going to move, you approve it, and then you hit then you hit accept to go, but it was just like kind of clunky in the way that it did that. It just felt
bad. It did seem like it was moving slower than it needed to, like the basic gameplay.
And I don't exactly know how that sort of decision came to be, like why they decided to do it that way, or like why they didn't just sort of streamline it, but maybe there's something going on that I'm not understanding.
Deep Blue Sea writes, hey, so all your talk about old DOS games has really gotten me wanting to play some Day of the Tentacle again. Any suggestions on where to track down a copy and the best way to play it on a Windows 7 system? Scum VM is the best way to play it on a Windows VM. 7 system. Yeah. You can't buy it. I looked around for a little while.
You
so
probably
I mean,
find it on Home of the Underdogs.
You can get it from Abandonia at least. I don't know if that's a Scum version or like an actual install. You definitely want to play it on Scum.
Yeah.
Because you just download Scum VM and then get a hold of the data file, which you can get out of any copy of it.
Yeah.
And open it. But that's a virtual machine that'll run on anything, and it's cool. Also, he writes, what's your opinion about using Kickstarter for indie game development fundraising? I found a few interesting games and have donated accordingly, but I was hoping you could say what you guys feel are the advantages / disadvantages. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Like, it's like distributed patronage, and I think that is like just a really awesome model for cool shit getting done. You know, I think it eventually... there's going to be a saturation point at which it might stop working quite as well as it does now. And it's going to get more and more important for you to have like a really sweet PowerPoint presentation describing what you're going
to
do.
Yeah,
and
you need to
those,
be able to show people
which
what
honestly is
giving
fine.
Money to.
They're, well, sure, they vet projects. Like they turn down the majority of projects that are approved.
And I mean, making a really sweet PowerPoint presentation does at least demonstrate that you can get shit done.
Yeah.
Right. But it's like, what I don't want to see is that becoming part of like a business plan. You know, I don't want a guy getting a loan for $5,000 to pay somebody to make a really sweet PowerPoint presentation for his Kickstarter because he thinks that he can get $30,000 on Kickstarter to fund the development of this thing for 6 months, right? Like, it is a cool thing, and I'm just waiting to see how the world rapes it.
It is, I think it has the advantage of being small enough that it's not going to attract the attention of like people that are going to fuck it in the ear hole or whatever. I don't know much about how the company itself is structured, but like they vet each thing that comes through, and I think they've done a really good job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of stuff doesn't get funded. Which
yeah, our buddy MC Frontalot, his video got
triple funded,
and the first one of those came out like a couple days ago. You can watch it on Boing Boing.
Super
it's
awesome.
A really good video, and there's two more of those coming. And it's just because his fans were like, "Yeah, we'll pay for a video." You know, we had a project that, like this ancillary comic book project for Kingdom of Loathing that Josh was like, "Yeah, I want to do this," and I was like, "I don't really want to be in the comic book business." And he was like, well, if I can get people to commit to buying it, can we do it? Sure. So did a Kickstarter and got funded and, you know.
7X funded.
Now there's going to be a comic book. So, you know, that's cool.
And it's looking like it's going to be awesome.
Pretty good. Yeah. Casey Wiederman says, Glitch, how do you feel about their business model? Basically, there's no way to use real world money to get an advantage. Only cosmetics. And when you vote, your votes count for more. Your votes, which influence the decisions of the developers. That is frightening.
What?
To me.
I mean,
really? I think that there is absolutely nothing wrong with listening to the people who are actually like financially supporting your product.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that you shouldn't listen to the people who pay you more than you listen to the people who don't. I'm saying you shouldn't listen to anyone.
Oh.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I don't have a problem.
You are on this extreme, don't listen to anybody when they bitch.
The idea of the player community creating the story and content of Glitch is kind of built into their plan for the game.
Sure, okay, but that's
different than
what I don't want is the player base voting on feature. Like, because here's the thing: you put to a vote, okay, players, how much damage should this sword do? Everybody votes for 9 million. You know,
those are probably not what they're.
What I want to do is I want to donate $1,000 to Glitch, and every vote is for give me some fucking skeletons to kill, Glitch.
Huh. Is that how you vote in the presidential campaign?
Yeah, yeah. Whoever is going to give me the most skeletons to kill. So, like, big genocide supporters will usually get my vote. Like,
Pol Pot.
Yeah, I voted for Pol Pot.
Yeah.
I voted for Pol Pot for every position. Like, Pol Pot for Mesa, Arizona City Council. It's got to be better than Jerry Lewis.
Although, Joe Arpaio's working pretty hard at
creating additional skeletons. Yeah. Now we've decided that instead of tent city jails, they're just going to actually chain people to cactuses out in the desert, and then eventually there's a skeleton.
Coat them in honey.
Yeah, just bury them up to their necks on an anthill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pretty cool. Good old Joe Arpaio. Totally sane guy. We should totally keep voting for that guy. This isn't a political show. How hard is it to not talk about politics, guys? Don't vote for insane
clown posse.
Yeah. Dangerous madmen. Do not put dangerous madmen in charge of your state's guns. Because that's what the sheriff of a county does, right? He mans the guns for the entire state. Yeah. Those guns that are pointed at Mexico. Hragg says, about Frozen Synapse, it's based on LSN, which is kind of abandonware, and I don't really advise you to look into it. It's still played, but with fan-made hacked-up server. Game concept is literally the best game ever, no matter what you say, Zach. And if you buy two copies of it, or if you buy... Wait, you buy two copies of it because it's targeted for multiplayer. Playing versus bots is stupid and unfun.
I had fun with it.
It can be compared to chess or Go. It's all about playing versus human to anticipate their move, to think about the way they're thinking, etc. I think Hot Stuff is going to like it.
Rock, Paper, Scissors is also, like, thinking about their moves in advance and stuff like that.
Yeah, just playing that game where you do repetitions of Prisoner's Dilemma.
Yeah.
Let's see. So people talking about Team Fortress 2. The original Team Fortress was a Quake mod fan-made in 96. It was very popular, and they created a company or something, and Valve bought it. Then there was Team Fortress Classic made already in Valve, which is on Half-Life Engine. Then there's this one made on Source Engine. Yes, it came out in Orange Box along with the original Portal. Okay.
Wait. Is Half-Life 2 the Source Engine?
Yes.
Okay. So when they say Half-Life Engine, that's the original?
The Half-Life 1 engine, yeah.
Okay. Are they going to port Half-Life to the Source Engine?
They did already. Yeah, that came out somewhere. It was years ago that they released Half-Life Source, which they updated the engine, but not the textures, I don't think. I think there might have been some third-party high-res texture pack that you could download.
Why can't I get Half-Life for Mac on Steam?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm surprised that you can't.
Because I've been super excited about playing that franchise, but because I'm a dork, I kind of want to play the first one first. Even if it isn't important, I just want to do it.
Sure. It's not that I don't think it's important. I think it's the ship has sailed, right? It was an amazing product of its time.
Play the second that you could watch a Let's Play.
Like a highlights reel would be the thing, right? Like, you don't need to do the shooting.
Watch McKenna's YouTube videos of Freeman's Mind. Those are really felt
like hilarious. Half-Life was really good about, and this was their goal in the, like, I read about their design meetings. Like, every 15 minutes, the player should see something that he's never seen before or do something that he's never done before. And if you could have just those moments, it would be really awesome, but you wouldn't appreciate them as much if you hadn't spent all this time, like, creeping down corridors and shooting dudes.
Do you think that was something that made Psychonauts so awesome, was that, like, around every bend was something new and interesting and cool? Different.
I think that was probably a lot of why it wasn't very accessible. Because I don't think the game was very... I think it went too far down that. I think that Psychonauts was not a particular kind of game. It defies genre classification in a way that...
Although,
like,
you know, we said 3D platformer. 3D puzzle platformer.
Yeah, 3D puzzle platformer with bullshit adventure game elements and impossible jumps. The Lone Goldfish says, hey Zach, I saw you started up a game of City of Wonder on Google+. I imagine you played it just long enough to realize fuck this Farmville bullshit and left, but I'm curious as to your thoughts and if you guys try games just to see what the rest of the industry is up to, even if they're not your thing. I started a game of City of Wonder and it never finished loading, so I guess it told my friends that I was playing City of Wonder, but I don't know what it's like at all. I was just like, oh, a game. Google+ has 11 games on it now. I should click one that isn't Hearts or whatever. And I clicked on that one and it didn't do anything. Also in Minecraft, are you guys more builders or explorers? I found myself spelunking all the time with so many mines and crevices and ghost towns and maps to explore now. Where would you like to see the balance lean between creative building, exploration, adventure, and mechanical contraptions as Minecraft progresses further? I am definitely explorer. More of a builder.
I'm definitely more of an explorer. I mean, I like to build.
You say that. You build all sorts of cool stuff.
I mean, I build stuff, but just about everything I have built has been a contraption or improvement to this single house that I live in.
Was that the wall that built itself and then blew itself up?
Yeah.
That was part of the house?
Yeah, it's right off the back of the back garden.
Is the house in the multiplayer game, or is that a single player game?
Yep, it's in multiplayer. I've got my little island not far from
pretty close to the spawn.
Yeah, it's near spawn. It's not like crazy close, but you can walk.
Did you specifically make the island perfectly round?
Yes.
You didn't just find a perfectly round island.
No, I found a section of ocean that was large enough and made a circle.
Did you? Was it just? empty ocean before you got there?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
How deep was it? Because you had to like displace all the water and...
Yeah.
Or is your basement just the ocean?
There was a lot of water in the walls that I gradually, as I built new rooms, had to then deal with. But
no way.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is crazy. You're crazy.
Old One writes, "Hey, Hot Dog Crew. I was pretty drunk the other night and started up Deus Ex Human Revolution again. When I played, I enjoyed the writing and the emails and books way more than when I was sober, but the stealth and combat both became much harder. I was just wondering what games, if any, you like to play drunk, or you get better at drunk, or hate to play drunk." I was pretty drunk when I beat The Binding of Isaac.
I don't know if I should say this on the radio, but I discovered I was about 1,000% better at Rez if I was on acid.
Oh,
huh.
Okay. Yeah. Or did you just feel like you were better at Rez, maybe?
The first time I actually managed to beat it, I was on acid.
I never did beat it. I was never able to finish the last level of Rez. Maybe
the doors of your perception.
Yeah, maybe the doors of my perception. Maybe that was the thing. It was one of those puzzles that I got to without having the key that I needed because I didn't know. I didn't figure out that the key was acid. And it wasn't until
you
I got
were
the
in
walkthrough.
The wrong dimension. Yeah.
It wasn't until I got the walkthrough from you.
Yeah. It was a walkthrough printed on that special paper that you put under your tongue.
It's printed very small. You have to read it with your tongue. Frankenbean says, "I would enjoy your video games, Hot Dog, with more sweet relish. What are your thoughts on the future playability of games? Old games can still be played in emulators, but social/MMORPG types don't have this capability as the game itself is on remotely hosted servers or requires many external players to make game experience exist. Seems that the games of today could blink out of existence and be unrecoverable for the future. While I can still grab an emulator and fire up Zelda or Zork, how will I start up a game of Farmville in 10 years?" I mean, that's a good question.
You won't.
You just can't, right? Like, I mean, this is what we were talking about. Like, you'll never be able to play. Like, once World of Warcraft shuts down, you will never really be able to play it because what it was what it was when there were people
Isn't there
playing.
Like there's some like not business. There's like a nonprofit or something dedicated to
there's the music like
video
the museum.
Game preservation. Yeah, and aren't they trying to figure out some way to preserve?
They've been taking like they've been World trying to get like snapshots of the game at certain points in its development. But even then, it's just not going to be the same without having 1,000 players online, right? Like you're not going to have the same experience as an isolated viewer.
I mean, but could you say though that like it's not the same experience watching Seinfeld on DVD as it was when you were watching it one episode a week and talking to all of your coworkers about it?
I think that is a valid way of saying it, but it is
definitely better for Seinfeld to exist on DVD than for it to just not exist on DVD.
Correct.
Even though you're not getting the same experience, right? So like, I mean, World of Warcraft will get preserved. You will World of Warcraft is a big enough deal, and enough people will care about it for the next 500 years that there will be. Yeah, you know, I mean, it's an important thing.
Sure, right? I'm not sure that 500,
maybe not 500,
like,
but 100
virtual
years.
Cardboard cutouts of people's avatars all over the city, like the end of Blazing Saddles.
Or people will be reenacting like the Onyxia fight in caves, like they reenact Star Wars in Reign of Fire.
Ooh.
Man, I wish that movie had been better. There were so many awesome things about that movie.
Yeah, that was the beginning was really strong. telling the stories of the ancient ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's a thing, right? I mean, like, I could see, like, if I were a retired dude,
yeah,
I could see focusing on that. Right? I could see focusing on video game preservation efforts because like that's a thing that I care about, and it's a thing that if I wasn't like if I wasn't busy working, I could see dedicating a lot of time to preserving video game history.
Would you get giant books and then take video game developers and press them so they'd be preserved for future generations?
All right. Check out Flat Tim Schafer. don't tell him your game is too hard. Let's see. Hey, video games, Hot Dog, says our chicken. As new people to Team Fortress 2, what's your take on the cosmetic items or different weapons? I've played it enough that I have lots of sweet swords, but I'm curious how a new player looks at it. For cosmetic items, did the different hats, masks, whatever have any effect on how you enjoyed the game? What about for the weapons, which do have a gameplay effect? If you got any item drops or were given any guns, what was your reaction? I didn't know enough about what the fuck was going on to even really understand what the different enchantments on the guns were. I
never got any drops that were relevant to the characters I was playing.
Yeah, I never played a medic, and I only got drops for the medic. People gave me a bunch of weapons and stuff, and they were all like, okay.
I didn't know you could give people items.
Yeah, yeah. I'm surprised nobody gave you stuff.
No. I mean,
they don't like you as much as they like me.
Maybe they did. Well, my name was also not the same name in game.
Oh, sure.
Snig. I had a couple of items that either I found or were unlocked because I bought the game before it was free, so I got that hat or whatever, and then
some stuff that you get buying other games too.
Yeah, I got some stuff from like Comic-Con and stuff that I had some codes for or whatever, right. But like I kind of just wanted to play the base game, you know?
Yeah. Those guys walking around with a fucking bag on their head and a sword.
The cosmetic
differences were
kind
of... People, there was a post about the demo pan, which was just this absurd thing that where they just dressed up this guy in this ludicrous costume that you can put him in and compared him to the original one and look, this is how far this bullshit has gone.
I mean, I didn't really have any trouble, like, mechanically with it. Like, I didn't get into any situations, I think, where I died because I couldn't tell what that character was. But I did really notice the way it kind of fucked up the art style.
Yeah. You know, there were times when I got killed because I was like, I had my head in my hands weeping for the people who did the original art.
It's like, what? This is, I mean, these accessories are dumb. Yeah.
I was too busy trying to shoot at things and not get shot at to really notice a lot of the cosmetic stuff.
Sure.
So, you know, I have very little opinion about that.
Psyche writes, can I put in a plug for a friend's podcast? Yeah, like you ever get around to reading the forum on the show anymore. Hey, listen to this. Anyway, it's called Top Score, and it's about the musical scores from video games. She's interviewed the folks who have written the scores from Halo, Dragon Age, Call of Duty, Black Ops, and a bunch more stuff. It's aimed at the admittedly small classical music / video games crossover demographic. Here's the link. And it's a Minnesota Public Radio thing. It's also on iTunes, called Top Score. Everyone listening to should go to anyway and give Video Games Hot Dog the high rating it so very richly deserves. Gosh, thanks.
Have any of you guys listened to the video games podcast that's associated with the Nerdist Network?
No. Is there a specifically
Nerdist launched it like maybe 2 months ago.
Huh. What's it called?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. I don't remember. I'll have to look it up.
Okay. You can tell me later and I can edit it in. I'm totally not going to do that. I listen to the Giant Bombcast.
Yeah.
Although I'm getting less in love with that as time goes by. Really? I don't know why. I think maybe I just get into something and then my enthusiasm fades over time.
I always enjoy it. Those guys have a really, really snappy repartee.
Shop Troll says Video Games Hot Dog could do with less filler. I'm going to read
it's
some of the great Gatsby.
And,
let's see. Oh, are you going to actually go find the name of this podcast? Wow, we got to... Man, what are we going to do? We've lost our third leg.
Oh, no.
Some other people are talking about the show, not asking questions about video games. Hey, fellas, bother you in the Twitters already. Are you still interested in making a Video Games Hot Dog Minecraft server now that 1.8 is out? Because I am interested in playing a Video Games Hot Dog Minecraft server now that 1.8 is out.
I feel like 1.9, which is going to be the actual release, is going to change things enough that we should just...
I feel like X.X is always going to be the big time when everything is going to be awesome and change, and it's always whatever the next...
But I mean,
the next patch is
1.9 is going to be the actual release.
I don't believe that means anything, right? Well, it's just an arbitrary date, and I don't think they've met the goals that they had set for that release because I don't even know that there were like really meaningfully set goals, right? Like I think they did a feature freeze like 2 days ago.
Yeah,
for content, and I don't
But the difference between like. It's the difference between the next update and every update after that, I feel like, is not going to be as huge as the difference between the current update and the forthcoming update.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'll believe that when I see it, right? Because every big update has a list of features, 15% of which get put in.
Well,
you know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think we'll
see.
I think we should definitely start one. I think 1.9 is when we should start it.
Okay. Are there places where you can reliably... Like, I know there are places where you can just, like, pay $5 a month to have a Minecraft server running. Like, I don't really want to host it on our servers.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I've heard of things like that, but I don't know how it works.
Yeah.
Or how much it costs.
I don't know. I think my girlfriend's Facebook group has a Minecraft server. I'll have to ask them. That would require me to log on to Facebook. Did you find the podcast?
No, I'm thinking... I feel like the internet maybe is down.
Huh.
Because I cannot get the internet.
Okay. I checked my email accidentally on my phone. so I don't think the internet's down. You know what? That's enough listener mail. We got through as far as I'm going to get on this forum thread, so I'm going to lock this forum thread and
did we have start Twitter a new question?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. We're at a length.
Okay.
We're at a good length. I've had a good time doing Video Games Hot Dog with you guys. If somebody, oh man, you know what you can do now? You can find Video Games Hot Dog online as one of the three podcasts in the Hot Dog Network. Yeah. Available at hot.dotdog.dotnetdog.hotdognet.com.
Does that actually work?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Totally does. You can also send us a Twitter at VGHotDog. You can email us VGHotDog@gmail.com. You can go to them forums on VideoGamesHotDog.com. Yeah. Anybody else got anything they want to say before I hit this button?
No.
Good night, everybody.
Have a great week, everyone.